Hello, and welcome back to another episode of the H-Band Podcast, your go-to podcast for longevity policy discussions. I'm your host, Dylan Livingston. Today, I'm sitting down with Brenda Eep, VP of Communications and Partnerships at A4LI. In this episode, we discuss Brenda's journey to becoming a biology of aging researcher at the Buck Institute and what our plans are at A4LI over the next few years. Without further ado, here's Brenda Eep.
Live long and prosper.
So today we have a very special guest on our H-Span podcast. She is none other than the great Brenda Eep. Brenda, thanks for joining the H-Span podcast.
Glad to be here, Dylan. Super excited to talk with you about what we have going on for A4LI.
Yeah, exciting year. You had a choice in doing this, right?
Yes, of course. You didn't corner me or anything like that.
No, okay.
So the personal passion of mine. So.
Personal passion. She's always wanted.
I want to thank you for creating A4LI. Jeez.
Yeah. It's crazy to see what we've grown into in the last 2 years, 3 years. If you asked me back in the early days where we'd be in 3 years, I don't think I would have said here, just because I was, so focused on getting things done in the moment. But it's an exciting time. I think you would agree, right? I think there's a lot of reason for our longevity community to be excited.
That's all I've been hearing about, actually.
And, everybody's excited.
The press, right, has written a lot about the potential.
Yep. We've had a few reporters calling us, a few different outlets. So we'll see how that turns out.
Yeah. And yeah, the press thing is, you'll be on Fox, right?
You'll be on Fox. We'll both be on Fox. Yeah, we should actually. That's a good idea, Brenda. Look at us brainstorming business ideas on the pod. Love it. So I do want to interview you, though, and I do want to let our audience know why I value you as a team member so much. You have such a unique background and your experience, not only in you being a PhD in the biology of aging from the Buck Institute. I think that gives you a very unique vantage point of the field, but also your experience in fundraising and putting on events, which really fit seamlessly into your role here at A4LI. So I'm going to let the floor be yours for a minute. Can you just start us off? How did you get involved in the biology of aging? What's your backstory?
Oh, wow. Yeah. Everyone else you've interviewed, I think we all have our different story. But the most, I think, cliche or the one we've all heard about, it's like we allude to our grandparents, right? They still, Dylan's. You live with your grandfather, right? Mm-hmm. It's been an interesting time growing up with them, and you learn a lot, hopefully, through their experiences and wisdom. But I think I have two different routes, and I'll keep it short. But I had the privilege to grow up with my paternal and maternal grandmothers, and they age very differently. One was a chain smoker, and she had diabetes and all these other comorbidities, right? And then it really, and then falling and break your hip was the story, basically. Once you do that and you don't recover, things just go downhill pretty quickly. And then I actually grew up around my maternal grandmother who died at 100 just due to old age. As a child, seeing those trajectories, I think you can best believe that, like, you're curious, right? Like, these are older people and one, like, they died differently. But I grew up with my maternal and actually we shared a bunk together. So we were like best friends. I had the top bunk. She had the bottom bunk. We actually had a great time because she raised me. So I learned a lot from her as well. And yeah, that's when I was going into college. I actually didn't think about aging research at all, right? But I knew that there was something we could do about how we age. A lot of it is in our control. So that's why I got really passionate about investigating the environmental factors, the impacts on aging. Community, we talked about a lot. That's a big equation as well as how someone ages. But actually, Dylan, I actually went to school to become a forensic scientist.
Oh.
I was interested in death in the other spectrum, right? Investigating homicides and stuff like that. Really passionate about just biology.
I can't believe we've never talked about my love for Law and Order, have we?
Oh, which Law and Order?
SVU?
Yeah, oh my God.
Yeah. I only watch until once Stabler leaves, I'm out. But
oh, really? Yeah. He was my favorite character, too. No, actually. Ice-T? No, I'm kidding. I went to school for forensics and I was really into biology. And then it wasn't until I talked to my mentors about my career path as, like, a forensic scientist. actually a little boring. It's not very interesting what we see on Law and Order. We don't solve the mystery within 24 hours or less.
Not kicking down doors. Yeah.
It's more like optimizing protocols and pressing a button on a machine. Most of my friends in the field now are like toxicologists, right? So they measure fentanyl and heroin and blood and urine. Interesting, but it's something I didn't think about thoroughly. But I still like it. So still a passion of mine and really into mystery thriller. But anyway, so I went down that route, but then joined a lab actually that studied senescence in plants. So you don't hear that very often, but plants are used and have been used as an aging model as well. And I wasn't, Dylan, and I didn't tell you this either, but the first time I talked about longevity in person at a conference was in DC, actually.
Hey, you never told me that, no.
Yeah, when? No, this was at one of the Marriott hotels. And yeah, so I talked about aging in plants and like talking about the life cycles and why it's so important to keep a plant in its developmental stage, because when we eat like salads, these are just leaves. And there was an agricultural aspect to it as well. If we can keep vegetables around for longer, that'd be great. I think there was a talk at JPN talking about CRISPR too, and how we can use CRISPR to in agricultural sectors. Anyway, so I started talking about senescence a lot, actually. And I think that kind of solidified my passion for aging research. And I took a gap year to finish some projects. And I wanted to continue research and found the Buck and USC program, and was in Elliott at this time. And I was like, I'm going to get into this. That's a private school. It's a very prestigious one. And I came from like a Cal State, right? Chances were very low or slim. But you can't think like that. And if you don't apply, you're definitely not going to get in. Obviously, I apply, got an interview and everything like that. So fast track that. And yeah, that's how I got into aging research. I really was interested in learning more about mammalian aging.
You filled in so many gaps for me there, Brenda. I've known you for a year and a half, and I didn't know you shared a bunk with your grandma. That's new to me. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know your first talk was in DC. So you're filling the gaps in for me too here. That's great.
Yeah, I can't tell you everything.
Yeah. All right. Nice. So I think you touched a little bit on the prestigiousness of the Buck and how difficult it is to get in this field because of the, not only the high selection, but also just the fact that there aren't that many schools and universities and places doing aging research. Talk about the Buck a little bit. Talk about your experience there. I would assume you would recommend people apply because it's a great institution. I've been there as well. It's the campus is beautiful. The scientists are top tier, world leading aging biologists. So we'll give them their praise. But Brenda, can you walk us through what you did at the Buck, what a day in the life was like?
Yeah, I just wanted to underscore the importance of the Buck as well, right? Because they are an independent research institution studying aging biology. So they're focused, they're not tied to a bigger institution, a university at all. And they're a nonprofit. And when I applied, I was like the fifth cohort of the program. And now there are other institutions doing the same thing, and they have aging biology programs now. But yeah, so I joined a lab that studied ketone body metabolism and fasting in mice, right? So we hear a lot about lifestyle interventions, Dylan, and caloric restriction, right? And how that's good for you. And I was really curious to understand, okay, so when people are fasting, they're producing this metabolite called ketone bodies. And we're mostly familiar with ketone bodies because people who have type 1 diabetes have ketoacidosis. So this makes their blood acidic. And it's not healthy, right? That's the disease spectrum of things. But when you're healthy and you're fasting, these ketone bodies are produced in the liver, and they're actually good beneficial effects to it. They're a metabolite, so they're an alternative source to glucose or sugar molecule for energy. But they also do a lot of cellular signaling. They're also epigenetic modifiers too, similar to acetylation. And research has shown that acetylation and phosphorylation have great effects on these specific transcription factors that regulate gene expression. So I studied that, but I was really passionate about my research because I didn't induce like Alzheimer's in a mice or anything like that. It was just literally like cross-sectional studies of health, like aging mice. I didn't do anything to them. And I was measuring biomarkers in the blood and seeing how these ketone levels change just with age. And another understudied field in the aging field is like sex differences. You and I are very different. Obviously, there's a lot of sex differences going on and hormone changes and stuff like that. So I studied how fast an impact is affected by sex and age. So it was a very complex question, but you need a lot of data to really paint the narrative. But it was really good insights because older people think fasting is good, but it's usually not the case. If you have sarcopenia, it's like you're wasting away even more. These lifestyle intervention recommendations are helpful in a way, but if you're not measuring it, right, and how that affects you, it could be detrimental.
Absolutely. And that's, I think, some of the low-hanging fruit in the field we're pushing for at a political level. The A4LI goal here is to extend healthy lifespan in the U.S., right? That's ultimately the goal. We have a metric that we are tracking, and we're stagnating in it. And these lifestyle changes are what is going to get us the immediate next decade of life as a society, right? I just want to stress the importance just on hearing that of people listening. Definitely take your health seriously. But also, we as a coalition here should be also advocating for some of these behavioral and lifestyle changes that can be made at a population level. Brenda, I want to ask you a question now. So you filled in the gap there for me too, actually, about the forensic science path you went. I didn't know that either. So you started with forensic science, then you went to biology of aging research at the Buck, and now you're at A4LI. And my first question is, you having a good time?
Yeah, it's exhilarating. And I'm new to this, right? Like, I'm a scientist by training. I went from bench to policy. So you can imagine that my first year was like, okay, I have a lot to learn, but you've been very helpful and we've been supported by the community. So I think it's just been a great learning experience so far.
So you started with forensic science, then you went to the Buck to do research, right? And now you're doing policy for A4LI. So how has that jump been for you? Can you talk us through the first year and what you're excited for moving forward?
Yes, of course. I started as a volunteer for A4LI, right? And that was a really great experience for me to understand the mission in terms of an advocate, as a scientist and an advocate. So I met a lot of great people in the field who was proactively doing stuff that they could to, you know, extend their healthy years. And then in terms of policy, it was, I think, since it was like a team of one, like you, of course, there was a lot to do, right? Learning about the policy that we were pushing for, reading the white papers that had been established already under A4LI. But just learning about all the regulation that goes into FDA and some of all the steps. As the scientists, we don't really think about that. We just think about the discovery phase of things, unless you're pretty far along in your career where you're looking to start a company. So that was definitely a learning curve for me as well. But just learning about who represents the district that I live in, right? Like all the members of Congress, right? Going back to Government 101. But it was nice. Like, how do you phrase certain things, our mission, the pitch, educating members of Congress and staffers was a fun thing to me. But obviously it's different when you come from a technical background.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The pitches are unique when you're talking to, it's unique to the person you're talking to. It's definitely when you're talking to someone who's completely out of the field versus talking to someone who is in the field versus talking to like a general tech person to politicians, the pitch is always different. What you said you enjoyed speaking to staffers. Brenda and I back in September did a bunch of outreach and really went a streak there for a bit. So my first question is, what do you think is the winning pitch when you're speaking to a member? What have you found success with? We've had a few new offices come in our orbit in the last few weeks or in months. And so what pitch works? What do you think works to a politician specifically?
Yeah. So you and I have spoken to staffers, but also members in general have faced their own complications, right? Either knew someone who was dying from cancer or had a stroke or heart disease, right? So they get it, right? They understand that we've been just treating diseases and not really curing. And the gateway to curing this is targeting aging biology. And the cure and the $1 trillion we put into the field really just doesn't really give back quality of life aspect. Mm-hmm. You don't regain those healthy years. You're still living a life that very limited. So the potential here by targeting aging biology is you're reversing these symptoms, you're delaying of development of chronic diseases, right? It's such an untapped opportunity and the ROI is significant in terms of in an economic standpoint, but also just in every daily lives of Americans. So I think going back to just the roots of things is very relevant for members and staffers, right? Because staffers, they're usually in their 20s and they have this outlook as well, right? They're like, okay, in the next 5 to 10 years, I also have to think about my position as a caretaker, right? Because we all have aging parents and the burden, right, that comes with it, right? So it really depends, right, if you're talking to a member or a staffer, and it's all relevant.
The story that I paint is that we are, and everybody understands, everybody's heard about, you can probably thank Elon Musk for this, the fertility crisis and the aging population. Post about that all the time. But everybody's heard of that, right? And every politician has definitely heard of that. They've been hearing that for years. They know what's happening in Japan and China and Europe and all the developed countries really around the world. And so I usually start off with painting that picture. This is the world we're entering into, which means that there are less people, less healthy people to participate in the economy, more sick people to be taken care of, more caretakers spending time taking care of patients instead of participating in the economy. Rising medical expenses. The figure that I like is we're going to be spending $7.2 trillion or our national healthcare expenditure will be $7.2 trillion by 2028, which is just, I think that would be like the third largest economy in the world right there. Yeah. That was its own country. It was a shocking number. Yeah. And we're not getting these life expectancy gains. We're not gaining healthy years by the system that we have in place. And so it's time for a change. We need to take a new approach to healthcare and how we're treating patients and developing drugs and therapeutics. We should be focused on the biggest bang for your buck kind of approach. And that is the biology of aging, because aging is the driver of every disease that ultimately kills us. And if we want to have a game-breaking solution, this is what we should be shooting for. That's usually where I go. And then that's one of the pitches, but I think I'm giving more of the background. I think the aging population talk is very necessary because it's something that everybody's keyed into. Yeah. That's some of the pitches that we do at A4LI. I think that's good talking about it to policymakers at the very least.
This is why we're such a good balance.
Yeah. That's part of the reason why I wanted you to join. I think we've benefited as an organization having you on, not just from the fact that you are a PhD and very accomplished in the field in your own right, but the scientific twist on our posts and our letters to people and just the kind of expertise you truly bring to the job on a day-to-day basis. Kudos for being such an awesome person, Brenda. So let's talk about A4LI a little bit. So we have our DC summit coming up April 28th to 30th. We're looking to put on a big event for the purpose of opening a larger window of opportunity for our field to engage with these members and staffers and educate them en masse about the trajectory and potential revolutionary nature of the longevity field, right? And so that's the overall goal. What are you hoping to see come out of the summit that we're doing in April?
This is our second one, that, right? So we're going to definitely have an audience that are interested and want a better overview of the field, right? People who are looking for collaboration and partnerships, but also a continued dialogue, right? Especially since this administration has a health agenda, right? That falls well aligned with our mission of aging biology. And if our president-elect Trump...
As of this video, maybe not by the posting, though.
Yeah, but there's a lot to be optimistic about. But it's just, I think everyone, like you said, we're at that inflection point where it's easy to get, right? This aging population, this burden that we're facing right now, people understand that and people want to know more about what they can do and what's out there, right? There's a whole industry that doesn't get enough attention, especially in DC. So that offers a unique opportunity and a platform for our partners. Folks who are in the industry or are thinking about coming into the industry to just really engage and meet folks who are further down the line, right? Like MyoAge and Retro and other nonprofits as well, doing great things, funding projects. It's going to be an interesting time, but I think this is our time, Dylan, to be that organization spearheading these conversations, right? Especially with one-on-one meetings with their members as well, right? Because I'm sure they're less aware of that, of the companies in their backyard. So it's going to be super interesting to see, and especially the follow-up, right? It's one thing to meet with them and get them excited about it, but following up and getting them to join the caucus is crucial.
Yeah, really. It's what I've found is that speaking with a member, at least you got 15 minutes of their time, and then they're running to meet with some group, or they're going to vote on a piece of legislation, or the million other things that a congressperson does. That's the importance of making A4LI a sustainable organization. We need to not just do this one year and then it doesn't happen the next year. We need to not only have a consistent level, an increasing level of advocacy here. And I think you hit the nail on the head. This is the time for political action for this field. I would say the recent appointments, the Jim O'Neill, Jay Bhattacharya, Marty Makary, I think all of them are great picks for this field, right? And I think we want to capitalize on the opportunity that's in front of us here.
Yeah. And I'm just going to say that they've all spoken about cellular aging on a public platform before.
I've never seen it before. I don't think any other administration had people who were openly supportive of this field like we do right now. And I encourage everyone to in this field and beyond to take a look at that and be excited about that at the very least. I think this is an opportunity for us as advocates, but also for us as Americans, right, to really upgrade our health. And I think there's enough focus. Major legislation will be passed in the next 4 years. That's my gen. My other expectation is one will be focused and centered around longevity. And can you talk a little bit about the policy platform we've put in place? We wrote our NILAR paper. That was definitely a fun time getting feedback from the community and putting that together. Can you talk a little bit about NILAR and AAPLM, our advanced approval pathway for longevity medicine? What conversations have you had that give you hope that those are something that can and will be included in whatever health bill that we're working with here?
Yeah. So with it, it's, of course, this was before my time, but still, this is an important gap that we have to fill for the industry. Everyone's looking into going to clinical trial, but right now there is no clear consensus on what an aging clinical trial looks like, if aging is an indication or a disease. So I think we really lay out that regulatory framework for FDA to consider, but also as a talking point for all companies as well, right? So it's quite interesting to see how we can adopt existing, right, regulatory frameworks and work it into our AAPLM, right? This exists already, right? We're just tweaking it to fit into for this industry. And it's going to be a greater mission because it's for everyone, right? Longevity medicine will be for everyone. And so I'm pretty hopeful that it's going to be well received in terms of, because there's other nonprofits as well doing this, looking for this type of framework to be established, right? With the X Prize as well, right? 400 plus companies or teams have been formed, right? And they're going to develop some sort of therapeutic, right? That will benefit us all. So it's going to be an exciting time to, and I think that's going to be one of our call to action at the summit, right? To talk about our AAPLM. So that's my take on it. And it's still V1, right? We're still seeking industry feedback and stakeholder feedback as well. And we have, I think we've heard about other regulatory frameworks in different countries as well that we can adopt, right? From Japan. I think China is really focused on being in the forefront of this industry as well, too. And then in terms of our NILAR, that was a quick turnaround there. I think the reform came out in June and we worked really fast on getting and people's feedback, right? It was definitely an interesting time to hear from the industry, but also academics as well, because we want to fill the gaps in both industries and field, right? Academics in terms of increasing aging biology funding. And A4LI has done this already in the past. We've had petitions for people to sign to get their voices heard about aging, the underfunded divisions. And it's nice to see new additions to NIA as well. Dr. Viviana Perez was just confirmed as the director, and her background in some of the Evolution Foundation, I think, is a great addition in her experience. And so it's interesting to see what the aging biology field wants and needs, and then what the industry wants and needs. So we touch up on all of them in our NILAR paper, right? We want to focus more on geroscience and translating those findings into clinics. We created divisions that support the clinical aspects of things, right, to accelerate development and of these. So it's interesting time to put these policies forward now and get people additional support from the community. But I'm excited to see what V2 looks like for Nylar as well.
We'll be publishing that soon.
We've gotten a lot of feedback from folks who have from the field on the academic standpoint and the industry standpoint.
So. Yeah, no, it's exciting to be able to not only put out legislative ideas, but also have a community that's so engaged with it that we get the best ideas. When I started A4LI, I came in as a 23, 24 year old guy who was not looking to be the definitive voice on what this community needs, right? This is not the Dylan Livingston and Brenda Eve show. It's the longevity, the Alliance for Longevity Initiative. We're very deliberate with our name. This is an alliance of people. And so it's exciting though that we can put out feelers and get feedback from some of the brightest minds in the world. And so I thank everybody who's given feedback on Nylar, and I encourage everybody listening to take a look at the policy proposals we put out with the backing of the field and give us your feedback as well. I always say that Nylar is something that would be a great catalyst for this field. I think the recognition that longevity and aging research would get from the private investment community would be substantial if something like Nylar were to be created. With that all being said, however they want to silo off these divisions in the NIH works for me, as long as money is available for and directed towards the biology of aging. It's just a very clear misallocation of funding priorities at NIH. When you think about how many of the things that kill us are driven directly by aging, it's like something like 75%, 80% in the US. It's whatever form it takes, I think, is fine with me. I do think there are clear benefits to having something like Nylar, the indirect benefits, but the problem just needs to be solved, I believe. AAPLM, I think, also will be a great catalyst for the community, right? I think it'll not only encourage new companies to form with ideas around the biology of aging, but I think it'll give a leg up and encourage institutional investors. We'll give a leg up to existing companies that get accepted, which ultimately means quicker longevity therapeutics and more institutional VC backing for this community. But anyways.
No, I'm hopeful though. Innovation and driving in more investment and what our policies are going to do or set out to do.
And I've given this stat all the time. I'm all for curing cancer and I'm all for curing diseases individually, but the amount of life you gain from the theoretical longevity therapeutic, if you can just prevent these diseases from happening instead of curing them, that's a therapeutic like rapamycin, if it, you know, works as it does in you know, smaller mammals in humans, would be a 10 to 20% lifespan increase, healthy lifespan increase, which means that you're not getting cancer or Alzheimer's or heart disease until you're 80, 90, right? That's really significant. I mentioned that the USC is the school that put out the report that curing all cancer would only increase lifespan, but a healthy lifespan, but I think like 2.7 years. What do you think about that? Were you aware of that when that came out? Or was that before your time?
No, it was definitely a few years before my time, but I was already a trainee. Was that out? And I think Dana Goldlin at USC, right, on this a lot, right? Because he is on the policy side of things, the health policy stuff. So he's always out there and informing and educating, right, on these statistics, right? He actually said on one of his other papers that the costliest disease are the most preventable ones. That's the point that we're trying to drive home here, right? With aging biology, right? And I think there's a lot to still understand, because when you see the prevalence, right, when these chronic diseases develop, it's usually after 60 years old, right? So right now we don't know if we had an intervention, right? Like, where would we take it in our 20s or 30s or 40s, 50s, right? So there still needs to be a lot of understanding in terms of if it was available kind of thing. And we're seeing a lot of potential with GLPs too. And everything ties back to like metabolism.
And you think it's important for me to say real quick, I think you'd agree with this. We definitely do need more innovation in cancer biology and cancer research. We need more focus on Alzheimer's and curing neurodegenerative diseases. Those are things that may arise regardless of, and will arise, right? If, unless we find a truly rejuvenation, turn yourself back to 25 kind of therapeutic, other than that, these diseases will still exist, but just later in life, right? So we will need to cure and manage these diseases as well. The biology of aging just offers a greater and more a quantified greater amount of years, healthy years, and the prevention of all of these diseases, right? It's important to just note that the A4LI's position is not that we support more biomedical research in general in every field, but the glaring issue here for what's affecting our lack of lifespan and health span increase is the fact that we develop these diseases earlier and earlier, and a lot of it can be solved by the biology of aging research and development. So I just wanted to throw that in there.
Excellent point. Unless driven by food coloring.
Yeah. And cancer is not just a disease of aging, right? It's a disease caused by genetic instability and tumor growth. So it's can happen regardless of your age, even if you're like people in their 20s and 30s or can get cancer, right? That's not like it doesn't exist in those populations.
Yep.
I'm ranting now, but
cancer sucks.
Cancer sucks. It's horrible. It's all diseases are. Let's cure diseases. Diseases and disability. Let's cure everything. Let's cure everything.
Cure the smart way.
What's a smart way to you?
Going after those hallmarks of aging. But also, we need more tools. I think technology is going to help us leverage those ideas a bit more. We've come a long way in terms of like high resolution imaging, right? Mm-hmm. And now AI is in the forefront of in silico medicine too, right? So we really need to take these opportunities for granted. Come on, there's so much to be discovered, right?
Yeah. It's an exciting time in this field too, because there is so much to discover, right? I think traveling the earth was so interesting to people back in the 1500s because it was unexplored and there was so much to learn and see and experience, and space offers that same kind of wonder. And I think biology and the biology of aging specifically does that as well for me, just because there's so much for us to learn and so much for us to improve on. There's so many missing years out there if you think about it. So
yeah, we can't live in fear.
The only thing we have to fear is fear itself, Brenda. What? Do you know who said that?
Who?
FDR. See, this is why we balance each other out. You know the science stuff, I know the political stuff. Perfect.
I might have heard of that. Yes. I'm going to give you the credit.
I'll take that credit. All right, so let's wrap up. Let's talk about one more thing. I want you to encourage our audience right now to get more involved with A4LI.
Okay. Depending what your capacity is, right? We definitely need more voices in the field. In terms of, we have, petitions that you can sign. You can contact your member of Congress and tell them why you're passionate about the field, what the potential is in this field, and what we're doing as an organization at A4LI. For companies who are looking in the space, we need, like I said earlier, we need companies to be supporting the policies as well, because eventually it's going to be important to demonstrate who's in our community, who's backing these policies that we're pushing for. We can't just be like, 20 companies, right? We need everyone who has, studying cancer, Alzheimer's, heart disease, respiratory diseases, right? Those are all relevant. That's going into the same mission as increasing healthy years, right, for all of us. And just keep thinking about the graph that we have on our pitch deck to our national health expenditure, right, mm-hmm. is surpassing our GDP. And we have other countries too that have the same stagnant GDP for years now, right?
The growth of it.
Yes, the growth. So that's a starkey thing to think about as well. But we need everyone involved. I don't know. It's self-explanatory in a way, right? We're all going through this challenge here. Going into the next decade of my life, I just think a lot of things have changed. I have to think about a lot more these days and what's at stake as a woman, caretaker one of these days. So there's a lot at stake, and we need all the companies who have good ideas to seek out funding, be the voices of what we're pushing for, which is more funding and a better regulatory pathway that will benefit the whole industry and everyone who has a passion for aging and healthy longevity research should all get involved in terms of speaking out loud and volunteering with us. There's always something to do in this field, and we're always open to ideas as well.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. If you're a company, if you're developing tech to solve this aging problem, we are advocating for you on the Hill. And so we encourage you to get involved with us from a sponsorship standpoint. If you're an interested individual, you should definitely think about supporting us through our membership program. You'll get access to some of the tech at a discount on our marketplace. You'll be on our mailing list. It's only $60 a year. That's what, a cup of coffee at Starbucks a month. Consider supporting us though, because we really need not only people signing on to our mailing list and being in the know of what we're pushing and what we're doing. Those dollars go directly towards developing a grassroots team, proposing and developing and lobbying for legislation, advocating for a longer and healthier life for all Americans. Ultimately, we encourage you to get involved, membership, sponsorship, if you're a company. And then if you have time to volunteer, we always need people to help us with various events that we're throwing, organize our existing members and utilize them in the most effective way. And if you have time and you're passionate about seeing this space develop and seeing the lives of Americans get healthier and longer, please reach out to us. This is the A4LI team on the HFAN podcast right here. And yeah, you know,
I didn't realize how expensive lobbying can be. And the expenses of just putting together a newsletter and sending it out, right? Like that all requires money. So a membership, two memberships, it goes a long way.
Get it for your, spouse, mom, dad.
Really interesting newsletters.
Yeah. Very interesting, informative. And the marketplace is growing. There's a lot of cool stuff on the marketplace. So yeah, definitely take a look. Join our mission. This is the time to get involved. We have the political opportunity. Let's not let this opportunity slip by. Cool. All right, Brenda, thanks for joining the HFAN podcast. And I will see you tomorrow on our morning call.
Thank you for having me.
See you.
Live long and prosper.
Thank you, Brenda, for making the time to join us today. For those of you listening at home, I hope you found this conversation as enlightening and informative as I did. If you have anyone you would like to see make an appearance on our podcast, you can send your suggestions to us at info@a4li.org. HFAN will return in a couple of weeks, but until then, let's live long and prosper.